When you trained, we talked about this yesterday, the issue, and that's, we're not going to get into in Minnesota. But when you were trained quite a few years ago,
yes,
there was a whole course on community relations, correct?
Absolutely.
And what happened with Pete, I'll just set it up a little bit. When he became the chief of police in this department, we don't need to say the name, he found out that one of his officers was having community relations with the wife of one of his other officers. And I guess the guy was a supervisor. So he used to send the guy, the cop who he was seeing his wife, for nooners, he used to send him to go to the morgue or do something, go get me a sandwich, and I'll see you in a couple hours. And that was the first issue you had to deal with, correct?
I was on the job for about 3 hours.
Yeah.
This young kid comes into the office and said, if Sergeant so-and-so comes out at 4 o'clock, I'm going to shoot him. He said, any particular reason? And he hands me an 8-track tape. And he recorded the phone conversations yeah. with his wife and this sergeant. And I said, look, take the next 4 days off with pay. Just, I'll take care of this. And I said, your problems will be over. So I got in the dispatch area and I said, is so-and-so working? And they said, yes, he is. I said, get his ass in there immediately. So this guy walks
by the way, chiefs get to say stuff like that. Yeah.
This guy walks into my office. He's all a 6'6". I mean, he looks like the biggest thing I've seen forever. And he's just standing there. And I said, I need your badge and I need your gun. You're resigning right now. And he said, what if I say no? And I said, I'm going to let this guy ride with you at 4 o'clock. That's what's going to happen. So he asks if he can make a phone call. He makes a phone call. Comes back in my office. He gives me his gun and his badge, and he resigned.
That's
and
it.
He just made arrangements to get a job in a nearby town.
Yeah. I guess they didn't have the deep vetting, checking in those days.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll just say my only quick story. I was 17 years old, and I was going out with a girl that had a brand new Triumph Spitfire, and I was coming home at 3 o'clock in the morning, buzzing down, and I just opened it up, and I was doing 95 and a 40, and got pulled over by a police officer. I walked up to me, and I said, "Is there a problem?" And he goes, "Do I look like an idiot?"
Hey, what do you say?
So he took my license and registration, said I'll be losing everything because it's reckless driving. And the girl goes, don't you just go say something to him. So I get out and I walk back to the car and he looks at me, and goes, can I help you? And I go, I didn't know where I should be. He goes, get back in the car. He goes, when I'm done writing, I'll come see you. And I remember this like it happened yesterday. I looked down at his car number because it was 812 and came over the radio. Cars 812, 810, 814, active burglary in process. All cars proceed immediately.
There you go.
Handed me my license and registration. Said, if I ever see you walking again, you're going to jail. And that was the only thing I needed to drive safe after that.
Well, so Pete, you were on 18 years in Chicago. John does a great feature we get a tremendous, we get a response on two things, John, right? We get rats. And dumb criminals. And in your 18 years on the force, you've had more than a few instances of dumb people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, give us
one example was a fella goes into a Walmart, parks his car, and he gets a cart and fills it up, probably about $1,000 worth of stolen goods, and walks out of the Walmart. What he didn't know was while he was in the Walmart, they repossessed his car. So he had no way of getting home. And, of course, the security from Walmart come out, and they call the police, and that's how he was caught.
See, now, in today's day, he would just get an Uber. And the guy would be helping load the car, and the Uber driver didn't know anything, you know. Out and on, so.
Another time I was in my car, and there was an armed robbery, and I was about two blocks away, and I said, well, I might as well head over there because I'm probably going to be assigned to the armed robbery. Yeah. And I get there, and I talk to the victim, and the victim tells me, he said, I can't tell you much what the guy looked like, but I can tell you what the gun looked like. It was silver-plated. I said, you mean chrome plated? He said, yeah, he's real shiny. He said, he put it in my face and threatened to kill me if I didn't give him the money. I gave him the money, and he had two females in the car with him. And as it happened, there was a, he drove down the street, and he got stopped by the police for a minor traffic thing. The officer wrote the license plate down and let him go.
Yeah.
Give him a pass. Had no idea that he was involved in this armed robbery. And I get a hold of the officer, and I get the plate number. We run it, and I get the fellow's address. And I look up in the phone book, and I call him on the phone. And I said,
Pete was he was an economical detective, you know.
Well,
keep the mileage on the car as low as possible. That was the deal there.
Anyway, I called him on the phone, and I said, I know who you are, and I saw what you've done. And he goes, how much trouble am I in? I said, I want the money, I want the gun, and the two people you were with in the station, and you got till 2 o'clock. This is about noon, so I gave him 2 hours to get back to the police station. And of course, the guy hangs up the phone, and about 10 minutes to two, he gets out of his car with the gun in his hand, walking to the station. Of course, 5 uniform officers beat the hell out of him and take the gun away from him.
Chicago in the old days. It's different now.
And, see somebody walking in, holding a gun, walking into the police station. So they disarmed him, and they dragged him back to my office, and I said, I need the gun. And they gave me the gun. I look at it, and it's a blue.
Yeah.
It's a blue-nosed revolver.
Yeah.
I said, the kid that was the victim told me it was chrome-plated. I said, what happened to the other gun? He said, I got so scared we threw it in the Chicago River. I said, well, where did you get this gun? He said, we burglarized my uncle's house. He said, you wanted the gun.
So the guy confessed to multiple crimes, and you took another gun off the
Strangely
street.
Strangely enough, he was on the waiting list to become a cop for Chicago.
Not going there. Crazy. So
when I was on duty, my pen was more important than my gun.
Your pen?
I'm writing pen, yes. Yeah. It was more important than the gun.
Well,
and I was a terrible shot to begin with, and I had a 2-inch stub nose. I would have
I tell you, it took 3 weeks, almost 3 weeks to get somebody come on the show to admit they had a 2-inch.
Snub nose.
I know this story. I can't wait to hear this.
Anyway, my partner would stand out. Yeah, we had this rule when you went to qualify and you had to do it every quarter. Would stand next to me, and another fellow would stand on the other side of me, and they would shoot into my target just so we could get out of there. You couldn't go home until you qualified. These guys would shoot into my target to give me some help.
That's good. Well, did I not hear a story one time you were to a convenience store and they robbed it while you were there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so...
Actually, it was a convenience store. It was a gas station.
Okay.
And I was a smoker then. And I got out the Clark gas station. You open up a container where they had the cigarettes outside, and you bring it in and pay the guy. And I'm opening it up, and of course I'm in an unmarked squad car, but everybody in the world knows it's an unmarked squad car. And there's a guy inside sticking it up, and he comes out, and he starts shooting at me. Yeah. Of course, I jump behind a gas pump because that's the right thing to do.
That's a
smart thing to do, John. Anyway, we exchange 17 shots between us. Some poor guy comes in to get gas and pulls in front of the gas station. And I hit his car, and the bullet ricochets and hit this guy, hits him in the chest, and he goes down.
he couldn't hit him straight on. Thank God the guy pulled in, and yeah, it was a bank shot. And it caught the roof and then caught the guy, and that was that. Wow. But, all right, what did that feel like? I mean, you just wanted to get some
So, no, I adrenaline kicked in. Yeah. It's just it's survival. It's not a question.
Yeah, in that
of,
case it is. You know,
it's what any man would do.
You know what? Hold on. I should have you run on the board. Let's run it.
Any man wearing a pair of pants that calls himself a man would have automatically done the same thing.
Absolutely. I love that guy. I wish I
have to tell you a quick story. When I worked in the Bronx in the emergency room.
Oh, man.
Near Fort Apache. So we were really good friends with the police officers. And, man, they had a tough job back then. This is in the 70s. Mm-hmm. When the Bronx was a Wild West saloon. So it was my first night after coming out of X-ray school, working, doing a double shift, because the guy goes, do you want to work double shift? Little did my friend and I know, coming from a Catholic school on Long Island, that once the sun goes down in the Bronx in the summer, it's like the Wild West.
Sure was.
So we're sitting there. We had done 70 patients between 4 and 11 o'clock. And we're sitting there, and he'll know this. There's all the hospitals with the Ripley glass with the chicken wire in there. All of a sudden, it just shatters at the end of the hallway. This guy's ripping out the chicken wire with a shotgun, and he goes, this hospital killed my brother. Now everyone must die.
Really?
So we ran into the dark room because it's lead lined. And we called the security. And the security in the hospital those days were like Green Beret guys. So they subdued him, I guess. And they came to the thing and they go, all right, we got the guy. Can you come out? And my friend goes, well, then it's the guy. So we go, could you put your badge in through the pass box so we could see that you're really the police? And for the next 2 years, every time we went by any cop, any security guard, they go, hey, could you stick your badge inside the pass box stuff, guys?
I started in 67. In 68, we had the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And at the time, the Secret Service wasn't providing Secret Service services for senators and congressmen. And the mayor had tactical officers sent to each one. And I got a fellow from Indiana. His name was Birch Bayh. He was a Democratic senator from Indiana. And I stayed with him for 4 days or 5 days during the convention and took him around town. And what I didn't know was when I completed my assignment, of course, I went back to a tech team. And this guy wrote a letter to the mayor of Chicago saying, this is a nice young man and a family man. He's married. He's a good kid. Could you look out for him? Well, in Chicago, everything is clout. You have to know somebody to get promoted. You have to know somebody when you take the test. You have to know somebody. And all of a sudden,
you knew somebody.
Great things were happening to me, but I didn't know who my rabbi was. Yeah. You know, I didn't know who where it was coming from. And I make detective. I take the sergeant's test. I mean, I make sergeant. I mean, it's just in a rapid time.
Yeah.
And at some point, I got sent to the Illinois Bureau of Investigation, and it was another law enforcement agency, and it was filled by the state police and the Chicago Police Department. And the Bureau was designed to take high-profile cases and so on and so forth, and due to a wiretapping incident, our director was fired, and they disbanded the Illinois Bureau.
Wiretapping in Illinois is like golfing. It's just a common occurrence.
Well,
right?
How many? It isn't anymore.
No. Well, the governor's ruined it for everybody. They sure did. So, you went to Northwestern, too, as part of that.
Yeah,
that's a very intelligent person sitting in the room right here with me and the producer, as a matter of fact. So, it's good to hear. And then, let's talk about Chicago. John, you played Chicago, right?
Yeah, I used to work at Zanies, and I forget the other comedy club, but Zanies was the big club in Chicago.
You ever worked Mr. Pips? Was it
Mr. Pips Kelly.
That was down at Kelly's, right?
Yeah,
Mr. Kelly's. I guess that was a pretty cool place. I never got a chance to do anything on the road as a comic. So
I worked in Staten Island once. Richie Minervini and I will be on a Monday. we walked in and the guy was on stage telling this joke about the vegetable family that had the kid that took the carrot mobile and crashed it into a tree. And then the joke went on for 5 minutes. And then the doctors came in and they said, our little vegetable son going to be all right. And they went, no, I'm sorry, he's always going to be a vegetable. And his guy in the background stood up and went, yo, that's a stupid joke. Carrots don't dry. And I turned around and walked out of the club.
I'm jumping all over the place. Do you watch Chicago PD?
Of course.
And is it somewhat realistic?
It is.
Is there a Hank Voight, really?
Well, there's a lot of Hank Voights. There's a lot of wannabe Hank Voights.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Because I like that show. My friend Steve from Miami texted me. He goes, I like it because they call ahead and tell the criminal they're coming. That way there's plenty of time to get the guns out, because there seems to be a lot of gunfire on TV in Chicago. But there's also quite a bit of gunfire in Chicago in general. That is the south side of Chicago?
Yes. Now, part of the problem is in Chicago, the former Mayor Daley consented to a consent decree with the government that they're going to stop and frisk and some other issues that the city had, and it's got out of the control. All these kids went around with guns in their pants, literally like in a holster, and just... Everybody's got a gun on the south side every weekend.
Pete was telling me off air that there's a new superintendent in Chicago, and I gather he was hired, and the mayor of Chicago said that we've hired a new superintendent. He has a plan. He has a plan for Memorial Day weekend where there are as many shootings as there are fireworks displays. It didn't really work out?
No. They had 30 wounded and 9 killed.
Yeah. But he was only there 7 days. So it's pretty, you know, if you have a restaurant that's... Go ahead, John.
No, I was just saying, you know, he can verify this. Whenever you watch TV shows with... Two things that always crack me up is whenever a police officer stops anybody in any TV show, the guy just goes, hey, what are you going to do? And they just mouth off to the cop. Yeah. If the cop pulls me over, I play dead.
Yeah. Right? Well, I agree with you. I think 80% of the problems, if you don't have show an attitude, I think you'll be fine.
Just shut up. Just shut up. Let them do their job. And the other thing, too, I know he'll agree with this, and I know from working in the emergency room, in any TV shot, no matter where... Any TV show, no matter who gets shot, no matter where, they die immediately. Like, people don't die. People don't die like that. You know? I mean, yes, if you get shot probably in the middle of the head or in the middle of the heart, you're going to bleed out. But you just don't get shot in the shoulder and you fall over and you're dead, and you're just dead immediately. It's hysterical.
Especially nowadays, you know, medical care now is so much more advanced than when you were on... Well, how many homicides did you have in the years you were there?
Oh, gosh. I couldn't tell you. I would do 4 a week, 5 a week.
Wow. How many did you solve?
I had about a 90% solve rate.
Wow. Confessions or actually...
Both.
Yeah. Rubber hose?
And no.
Huh?
Waterboarding?
Never.
Waterboarding?
Never. No.
Listen, no Hank Voight?
Nope.
Put him in the metal cage and go in there, smack him around a little?
No. Nope.
Okay.
No. Nope.
That's not what you told me one night when we were drinking.
What? No, no. I never coerced a confession from somebody, or I never planted any information. Just it wasn't necessary.
I'm kidding, by the way. As we say in Jersey, yanking his
chain. Now, there are guys out there that certainly will do it.
Yeah. But,
I got a quick story. When I first became a policeman, I had a training officer, and he said, all right, let's get this out of your system. You got to learn how to write a ticket, and we'll sit here at the stop sign. He says, everybody in the world blows it, and we'll stop a car, and you can write your ticket and be done with that part of the training.
Yeah.
I said, okay. And lo and behold, this lady runs through the stop sign, and I turn the gumballs on and the lights, and she pulls her over, and she pulls over, and I said, can I see your license, please? At the time, they had bond cards.
That means?
You had a bond card. Instead of putting up a cash amount,
okay,
you would give the bond card, and that would be, I'd give her a license back and keep the bond card. Of course, if she jumped, the bail bondsman would go after her. If she didn't show up in court.
On a traffic ticket?
Yeah.
Wow.
This was years ago. Wow. I mean, they've changed the system since. In any event, I had never written a ticket. It must have taken me 20 minutes to fill in all the boxes. And, you know, of course, the guy didn't tell me you pre-write these things and just leave the only thing you leave open is what the violation is.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get done with the ticket and I go back to the car and I said, can you please sign your bond card? It's not signed. I give her a pen, and my wife had gotten me a pen for my graduation from the police academy. Had my name engraved on it, you know. She gets out of the car, she signs her name and takes my pen and flings it across the lanes of traffic. About a truck and a bus roll over it.
In your pen?
she just threw it out in the street.
Is that a felony?
No. I said, lady, why didn't you do that? She said, just leave me alone. You know, so I get back in the car and my training officer said, look, she just disrespected you. You don't let her get a pass. You know, I get out of the car and I go back to the car. Next thing you know, she hits me. Just takes a swing at me. Well, then I arrest her for battery.
You didn't recognize her? Had you ever dated her?
No, I never saw her. Never. Anyway, we get to the police station, and how could a ticket go so bad in such a hurry? And I'm confused.
You went.
And I set her down, and I said, Miss, I didn't. You know, I want to know what I did wrong. She said, well, I have a son that's got 104 fever at home, and I called the pharmacy, and they said they would wait for me till 8 o'clock. They'd stay open, and it's now 8:30.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, it's just one of those things. If she would have said something to begin with, she would have never got the ticket, and she would have never, you know, I would have never let her go on her way.
Sure.
But that's a little thing like that.
And you couldn't undo that now.
Well, I did. I went to the state's attorney, and I said, look, when she comes here, just dismiss it, you know.
That's nice of you.
And let it go. And I explained the story to him, you know, what had happened. But I learned a valuable lesson. Yeah. I mean,
don't give anybody your pen.
Well, I didn't write tickets anymore.
That's the 18 years on the force. He wrote one ticket, and that was it. After that, when the sergeant said, you didn't write any tickets, said, no, I'm out of pens. I ran out of pens. That's crazy.
I had a partner who retired after 30 years. And he turned in his original ticket book.
John, I will tell you that it was discussed to have Pete's former partner call in to arrange a Skype call, and we decided it would probably be better to leave him out of it. A truly colorful character, that would be a good way to describe
it. That would be him.
Hell of a guy. We got to take that real fast break, so if you need to go, now's the time to do it. We'll be back with Peter DeCorus, Little Petey, and with my good friend John Ferentino. You are listening to The Big Broadcast. When you pulled somebody over, can you tell the story about the woman that you pulled over and she wasn't having a good day?
I told you.
No, the other one.
Oh.
Because I never heard the end of it.
It's not my favorite story.
No.
It happened.
Well, she was a large woman, right?
She was.
Oh, okay, that's good.
On the weekends, every now and then, to make some extra money, I would work in uniform, and just to get some overtime.
Sure.
And on the weekend, I'd have to get in a patrol car and do what you do. I've got a traffic backup, and I stop and I get to find out what the backup's about. And the car's parked in the middle of the street. There's two ladies standing outside the car, and I walk up and I said, can I help you? What's the problem? And with that, this lady goes off on me. She starts wailing on me, hit me. Somehow I'm on the ground and she's got me literally straddled.
Yeah.
And she's just pounding the hell out of me. Well, people are calling the department saying, you know, you got an officer.
There are no cell phones, so they're going to pay phones and calling.
Yeah.
Or the box in the old days, 911. Yeah.
And I get a response of about 10 squad cars coming to help me.
Yeah.
And, of course, everybody that pulls up starts laughing.
Yeah. That's why.
And they're just letting this gal wail on me. Well, until they tried dragging her off.
They couldn't get off.
Then they realized that they had a problem on their hands.
Yeah, I didn't hear that end of the story because we came back from break, and I just was curious. The natural reaction of guys, it's no different than comedians like John and I in a room watching a guy bum, there's nothing funnier than watching the guy bum, or a bad musician, a magician. Am I right, John? Watching a guy where you know that it's not going to work. Do you have any of those stories?
I saw this magician come out once, and he had these gloves that caught you, and you put them on a solution, and you can transfer the fire back and forth from hand to hand.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to go out within time, you know, like before the gloves actually catch on fire. And this guy comes out, and he's going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and the gloves are getting hotter, and the flame isn't going out. And the gloves are now really on fire, and he's, like, making believe to the music as he's burning his hands. It's hysterical. Hey, I just got a text to ask the detective.
Yes.
In his opinion, what is the best TV show? Forensic Files, Dateline, or Snapped?
I like Dateline, personally.
Why?
You want to know what's more realistic?
Well, Dateline is very realistic. I mean, in that I'm astounded by the motives of some of these murders. I mean, why they were done and how they were done. They had one on about 2 weeks ago, and I was fascinated with it. A guy is a superintendent of a school district in Arizona, and all of a sudden he's found shot in his driveway. And they do a background on him. There's nothing that they can see. They go through his computer and find out that he had a relationship with a woman in New Jersey, I believe. The lady was married at the time, and her husband found out about him, and the guy drove from New Jersey to Arizona, waited in his driveway and shot him 3 times and took off. On the way out of town, he threw his cell phone into the river, but there was a barge down below, and the phone landed on this barge. When the policeman tried calling that phone number, they had a lead on it. Some guy at a construction site says, "We just found it on the barge." So, you know, that's how they caught the guy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's crazy.
That doesn't qualify as a dumb criminal, but you probably want to make sure it goes in the water.
Yeah,
if you're trying
to
get rid of it.
It didn't.
Yeah. It's
my son-in-law plays a detective on a TV show called Death in Paradise,
which is filmed in an island somewhere.
Yeah, filmed in Guadeloupe.
Yeah, but he's an English actor.
He's an English actor, and it's supposed to be a little island with like 500 residents, and the show's been on for 7 years. There's a murder every week. My daughter goes, "Why don't they just move?"
So, Peter mentioned this medical issue. It was a heart situation, right? And he now has, you have a defibrillator, right? You have a defib.
Yeah.
And
implanted. It's implanted.
Implanted. And we're in New York City for an event, and Pete and his wonderful, brilliant, the brains in the family, wife Nancy, they decide to take a horse-drawn carriage from their hotel up to...
No, a pedicab.
A pedicab, not pedicab. A horse-drawn. A pedicab from their hotel up to the Friars Club, I think it was.
Yes.
And now, Pete's a savvy guy for years in Chicago, but he never asked the guy how much this thing would cost. Have you ever taken a pedicab, John?
No.
It's the same thing. I wouldn't dance in my house, probably. So anyway, Pete takes this pedicab up. What did it cost?
$110.
$110 to get a pedicab. I don't know, 6 blocks or 10 blocks or whatever. And of course, he didn't bring a weapon with him, even though he could. That's not the part of the story that's interesting. Because of the defibrillator, it keeps a record of what happens. You would know this, John. You have a medical background. And he goes to see his heart doctor, and the heart doctor says, "I got to ask you a question. What were you doing on Tuesday?"
May 10th.
May 10th at 6:05. And Pete goes, "I'm paying some son of a bitch $110 for a pedicab, right?" That's what, his heart was going, "Wah!" like that.
It got up to 200 beats a minute.
200 beats a minute.
Yeah, and it's set to go off at 210.
I always say, it's not fun. Have you ever seen the defib go off on somebody, John?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My friend of mine had one of those implanted, and we'd be talking, all of a sudden he'd go like this. His eyes would just out of his head for a second. You got some crazy listeners. This guy just texted me that. You just got to read it. Okay. Nothing but what we're talking about. It goes, Gary and I once sat at a bar in New Jersey and saw you bomb so bad because we were the only ones who laughed. We looked around and no one in the place spoke English. And the biggest laugh you got is when you shouted immigration.
See, I was working a Larry Silver gig. I got to go quick. We have a minute and a half to go. Anyway, we're working up in this club in Melbourne, and we're working. And the guy ahead of me is the middle act and the whatever. And it was all Trump jokes, you know, bang, bang, bang. And he's Mexican. So he's making a big deal out of the fact that he's Mexican. And, you know, he's on and on and on the wall, and he's dying. It's not funny. I have no problem with any of it. It's just, it's funny. And I'm in the back, and I'm going, where do they find these people? So I go up, and I open the show by saying his name really was Jose, I think. And I went up and I said, what a pleasure to see Jose. He's a great guy. Give him a big round of applause, big laugh. And I said, I hadn't seen him in a while. In fact, the last time I saw Jose, we were working this same club. And I was at the bar with him, and the bartender yelled, ice. And... we didn't see him for like 90 days. And guess what? He wasn't real happy about that. I'm like, you opened the door. It's like a defense attorney. You opened the door. We have to thank, we're late, but that's okay. It's my show. I do what I want. We have to thank Peter DeCourse for some tremendous stories. Thank you very much, Peter. I think I have clapping for you. There you go. As I said, we couldn't do a sound check because I was on the air early today, so...